run a number of projects across the city seeking to serve those that have less. Now, my mum was brilliant at modelling compassion to me as I was growing up. She wasn't a Christian. She just had something, though, hardwired into her to reach out and care for the poor. When we'd go shopping into town, she would always go straight to the big issue guy that she knew. She'd always buy him his favourite coffee. She knew which Millie's cookies liked, if they're still around. And she was just brilliant at it. If we went and got fish and chips on a Friday, she'd buy an extra portion to give to the guy that slept on the bench outside. You know, that was just who she was. So I think kind of growing up, reaching out to others was quite normal to me. But it wasn't until I came to faith as a teenager and I heard the scriptures being preached, then realised that compassion was absolutely central to God's heart, that his heart breaks for those who face hardship and poverty. And I came away thinking, well, if it matters to him, it should matter to us. And as a young and very zealous teenager who was ready to take on the world, I think I felt a little bit frustrated that, as amazing in many ways, the small local church that myself and my twin sister Alice had found ourselves in, they were amazing, but they really kept loving the poor as a real sideline ministry. You know, it was just for the three or four in the congregation who already liked doing that kind of stuff. It wasn't something that they brought in and they talked about and celebrated and invited everyone into as part of their own discipleship to Jesus. And I think this is one of the reasons why I fell in love with the Vineyard. When I moved to Nottingham for university a long, long time ago, I went to Trent Vineyard, which is the big vineyard up in Nottingham. And I walked in and I just saw this massive church, and they placed compassion ministry and concern for the poor right at the heart of what they did. You know, they ran soup runs, they had a furniture project, they worked with vulnerable families. It was just so central to who they were. John Wimber, who was the founder of the Vineyard movement, was renowned for having shopping in the boot of his car. Just used to drive around with it, and he'd give it to people if he was prompted and knew they were in need. And he was so firm that compassion ministry was an essential part of following Jesus that he said this: if you're not going to care for the poor, then don't use the Vineyard name. Flip. No messing with John. So in the very DNA of Vineyard was this understanding that care for the poor is to be a priority for those of us who worship God. And so it's obviously then no surprise that when I turned up at the Trent Vineyard Church as a student, that it did just smack me between the eyes. You know, here are people that were trying to live this out and do this. Now, you'll be glad to know that our church does already have a reputation of putting compassion into action around our city. If you've been here for ages or you've just joined, hopefully that will have come across by being part of this church, that we love doing this stuff. But perhaps you will just allow me just to elaborate this by just sharing a few stories. So the first one is one of my own. I was on a night out once with some mums from the school celebrating someone's birthday. And one of the mums was there who I'd had a bit of an ongoing conversation with as we were setting up our Tiadva house. Now, that's a house that we run as a church for guys who are homeless or vulnerably housed. It's a supported living house. And me and her had been talking about it on and off. But on this night out, anyway, and out of the blue, maybe slightly prompted by the number of cocktails that she'd had, she just shouted in front of everyone. I felt like half the bar were listening. And she said, "You know, the thing I love about your church, Chloe, is that they will accept and love those who everyone else has turned their backs on." I'd like to say I said something profound and godly back. I just was like, right? You know, another story I could share is the origins of our food co-op that we run on a Tuesday. We were restarting after COVID, and we had a call from the local headmaster of a local school whose families we had done some sort of organised food shops for in the pandemic. Anyway, he phoned me, and he was just really concerned about the ongoing struggle that many of his families were facing in being able to access affordable food. And he thought we would be the ones to help. And this was actually how the food co-op was started, you know, just in a response to a local school, knowing us as a church who would hear a problem like that and want to be part of the answer. And, you know, I know that you guys here in the West, you have fostered an amazing relationship with Dusty Forge. You know, that faithful week in, month out, donating food to them has given rise to so many opportunities for you to partner with them, to bless the families that they work with. And it's a beautiful thing, and that reputation is growing for you guys in this corner of the city. It's just wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. So this value of courageous compassion is already part of who we are. That's the good news as a church. But today, I just want to remind us of why this is to be so foundational. why it is a non-negotiable and why we want to push into it more. Are you with me? Yes. Now, it is impossible to read this book, the Bible, without capturing how concerned God is for those suffering hardship. For example, we can see in the book of Galatians, in the New Testament, where the early church are in full-on debate mode, and Christians are good at that, aren't they? Getting together, having a big debate about whether they should send Paul off to take the gospel message for the first time ever to the non-Jewish, the Gentiles. And after a lot of hooing and haring, they concluded that, of course, he should go. And incredibly, the only thing that they added as a caveat was this, Galatians 2, verse 10. All they asked was that we should continue to remember the poor, the very thing I'd been eager to do all along. You can almost hear Paul's indignation, can't you? As if he would forget to do this, as if this could be left out or separated from the gospel message of Jesus. Thinking about for this talk, I was thinking it's kind of the modern day equivalent, perhaps, might be reminding another adult to wash their hands after going to the toilet. Be like, what? Of course I'm going to. Like, yeah, I was eager to do this the whole time, guys. Because, of course, the apostles, Jesus' first disciples, you know, it was so ingrained into them. They'd literally been around Jesus, spent time with him, and seen that a care for the poor was a non-negotiable when you hung out with him. The poor mattered deeply to him. And it's worth saying that Jesus himself experienced poverty in his own life. He was a refugee in his early years. The family had to flee their home country in the face of persecution. Mary and Joseph, when they came to give their required offering in the temple to celebrate Jesus' birth, it was recorded that they gave the concessionary sacrifice, the one specified for those who were poor. And even as an adult, Jesus exclaimed these words in Matthew 8, verse 20. Foxes have dens and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. He was literally without a home. It's of deep significance that the God of all the universe gave up his riches and deliberately made himself poor. And not only did his life have hallmarks of poverty, Jesus made a beeline for those who were on the edge. The Gospels show us that Jesus had a special place in his heart for those who were marginalized and on the lower end of the power spectrum at the time. You know, the sick who were often left to begging in the streets without a social benefit system to pick them up. Prostitutes, the hungry, the destitute, those in need. Jesus always saw the person underneath the suffering. That's who he is. He recognized the God-given treasure in them, the immense value of each person. And this wasn't an optional extra. This was to be the very heart of his kingdom mission. In Luke 4, we see Jesus stand up to read in the synagogue and clearly outline his priorities using verses from the Old Testament book of Isaiah. Now, Isaiah was an Old Testament prophet who lamented at the failure of God's people to look after and care for the poor among them. Isaiah lays, throughout the book of Isaiah, he just lays on some very heavy charges against the Israelites, that their worship was empty, that God was angry with them because they'd not only forgotten the poor, they're actually perpetuating the oppression of those in need and making their lives unbearable. And it's from this book, the book of Isaiah, that Jesus reads when he goes into the synagogue that day. So if you want to follow along, it's Luke 4, verse 16 to 21. Jesus returned to Galilee in the power of the Spirit, and news about him spread through the whole countryside. He was teaching in their synagogues, and everyone praised him. He went to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and on the Sabbath day he went into the synagogue, as was his custom. He stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. Unrolling it, he found the place where it is written, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And then he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendant and sat down. The eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him. And he began by saying to them, "Today this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." It's kind of like a drop the mic moment, isn't it? You know, Pete Gregg, in his amazing book, Dirty Glory, reflects on the significance of Jesus' decision to walk into the synagogue and read these verses from Isaiah, and he puts it like this. After reading this passage to the congregation, Jesus preached a startlingly confident 8-word sermon. Today, this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing. Here is a man who knows beyond any shadow of a doubt that the Holy Spirit is resting upon his life for a very specific purpose, for the poor, the prisoners, the blind, the oppressed. You know, this was right at the heart of the kingdom mission of Jesus, and he modeled this to his disciples to do likewise. They knew how much he loved the poor and that they were called to do the same. The disciples would have heard his parable of the sheep and the goats in Matthew 25, where Jesus judges humankind using their concern for the poor, the homeless, the sick, and the prisoners as a yardstick for how much they have understood the gospel. And he told them, and all believers since, us included, as he finished the parable, that whatever we do for another person in need, we do for him. What I mean, what a profound mystery that is to get our hearts and our heads around. So Jesus was and is good news to the poor. He identified with them. He fought on their behalf. His first disciples understood this. The Apostle Paul understood this. The early church understood this. And we're going to try and understand that a bit more this morning. Now, myself and Tom, my husband, we have 3 small boys. And when our youngest started school, he came home crying on the 2nd or 3rd day, saying that he'd been pushed over by a bigger boy in the class and bumped his head. And now I was, of course, in equal measures heartbroken and very cross about this. But I did try to give some semi-sort of sensible advice, like, I'm sure he didn't mean to hurt you, maybe tell the teacher, blah, blah, blah. But I needn't have bothered. I could have saved my words because he had his own way of dealing with it. And he walked into school and next day marched straight up to the boy and looked him in the eye and said, I have 2 big brothers in this school, so you better not mess with me again. I just tell this story to illustrate in some very, very small way that for those who felt small and overlooked then, they could stand tall in the good news that Jesus brings. And this is still true today. I know that in this room, there'll be a lot of different circumstances represented. You know, you may yourself be facing food poverty or sleeping rough. You might have come to Cardiff to seek refuge here for you and your family. And do you know what? We would love to pray for you this morning. We would love to talk through any support that we can offer you as your church family. You know, a care for those who have less is part of our kingdom work as a church, part of our kingdom mission as it was Jesus's. Pete Gregg, who I quoted a minute ago, goes on to say this. The call to justice and mercy is the inevitable consequence of a call to walk in the footsteps of Jesus. He lived for the liberation of prisoners and emancipation of the oppressed, and so must we. There is no other way to be a Christian. Perhaps I'm sounding a little too emphatic here, but this really isn't contentious at all. It is biblically, undeniably, and absolutely true that all Christians are called to be messengers of good news to the poor. So I guess the question for us to ask is this. Now, what does it look like for us to be messengers of good news to the poor in our city and beyond as a church and as individuals? And how is it that we're to be courageously compassionate? Now, there is clearly no way I can have an exhaustive list. I will just carry out that. But I do have a few suggestions that I'd love to share, if that's all right. Courageous compassion requires courage. Back in January, I shared at our Restore Vision evening a picture I felt the Lord had spoken to me through. And the image I had was a bit like a huge wave rolling towards the shore, and that there were going to be bigger waves still to come, which I felt was about the time that we are in as a church in a city whose needs are getting bigger and more complex, with bigger waves of need to come, which I know might sound a bit bleak and also maybe a bit bleak to share that at a vision night. Do not let that put you off coming if we do another one. But, you know, we have seen the demand for our help at Restore increase staggeringly over this last year in line with the needs of our city. Just to help give some idea of what the reality of the situation is, let me just paint for you a very brief overview. 1 in 3 children in Wales are currently growing up in poverty. Jackie Peach, who many of you will know, she's in our church. She works hard supporting those seeking refuge here in Cardiff. And she shared with me an updated figure that there are approximately 3,000 asylum seekers at any given time in Cardiff trying to seek refuge, many of whom are living in hotels. The period of time they should be in there should only be a couple of weeks, but they can stay in there for up to 2 years. There's not enough accommodation for them to move into. And that can be one family living in one room for 2 years. They're desperately in need of extra food, clothes, often only having the things that they've come into the UK wearing. They need equipment, English lessons, the whole lot. Trafficking and modern-day slavery, abhorrent realities, they're happening right under our noses here in Cardiff. We also have an increase in homelessness, people sleeping rough. The hostel system is just failing epically to provide a safe place for them to sleep. We're seeing the cost of rented accommodation go up and up. Just makes that problem so much worse. More and more families are having to access food provision across the city because they can't afford to feed themselves or their families. You know, I've been reduced to tears, and I know the team have down at the Tuesday Food Co-op, just hearing that reality of that and seeing that worked out in the families we serve each week. And of course, this is just the situation locally. We're seeing huge problems across our nation and globe, affecting the worst off first and most severely. It's estimated that climate change by 2050 could see 1.2 billion displaced if we don't make massive changes. And I went on to say at this vision evening, and I do want to repeat it again today because it's still true, that in the face of a tidal wave of need and brokenness, we should take courage and remind ourselves that we worship a God who calms the storm. He is above all things. He will have the final word on all injustice, on all hardship, and on all suffering. He wins every battle. We cannot and must not lose sight of this, because it's from this place that we go out to serve the city, remembering that Jesus is good news to the poor, and we cannot be discouraged by the scale of the problem. You know, I'm always deeply encouraged to remember that there are real people at the heart of these facts and figures, and he knows and loves each and every one. And there might be those of you who are here this morning that either you're serving in one of our Restore teams, or perhaps you're serving on the coalface of some of this need in our city at the minute, maybe as a teacher or in social services or in the health service. And if you are feeling overwhelmed and dwarfed by the scale of the problem, let's pray for you this morning as well. Number two, courageous compassion requires sacrifice. This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. If anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need, but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? Dear children, let us not love with words or speech, but with actions and in truth. These amazing words from 1 John 3, 16-18, they remind us that we need to be ready to respond quickly and generously out of our material possessions, to take pity when we see need and reach into our pockets if we can help. It's quite literally a call to love our neighbour as ourselves. You know, it takes courage to give so generously at a time when we're feeling the constraints of the cost of living crisis. Sometimes we have to make decisions to live more simply or go without something ourselves just to free up our finances a little. I love this description of Mother Teresa that I found by Shane Claiborne, who's an American writer, and he'd gone to see her work looking after the poor and leprous in Calcutta. He, that is Shane, shared that one thing he will never forget about her appearance was her feet and how deformed they were. He would stare at them each morning and even wondered if she had contracted leprosy. One day, one of the other sisters explained that her feet were deformed because they get just enough donated shoes for everyone. Mother Teresa didn't want anyone to get stuck with the worst pair, so she digs through and finds them. And years of doing that had deformed her feet. Years of loving her neighbours herself had deformed her feet. Now, we are going to be asking in a couple of weeks for you to consider giving some money. As part of the talk, James is going to be giving on outrageous generosity. One of the ways that money will be used will be to help us cover some of the growing costs of our Restore projects. We find ourselves in a time where the cost of living crisis has meant, as I was saying, that more people need our provision, and yet funding opportunities are just much harder to come by. And we need some more money to fill up the shelves of our weekly food co-op. We need some more nappies and wipes and formula milk to give to families in need. We could do some more money to fund paint and DIY tools for our DIY task force and to cope with the increased costs of running the TADVA house. I know it does take courage to live the way of sacrifice that we see so beautifully lived out by someone like Mother Teresa, with her sore, broken feet that literally brought the good news to the poor and suffering. And it will take courage for us too as a church to collectively spend ourselves and our money on those in need of us. But we know, don't we, that we're here in the city such a time as this. As a slight side, I do like a slight side, the verses from 1 John serve to remind us, I think, of a reminder of why we're doing all of this in the first place. You know, take us back to the starting place. It's to tell the story of Jesus and put his brilliance on display. I love that phrase, wish it was mine, but it's not. It's John Tyson. But it captures it, doesn't it? You know, why do we want to be a courageously compassionate local church? Well, verse 18 in those verses from 1 John tell us, it's for his brilliance, his redemption story, his love flowing out of us is on display when actions and truth work together. Number 3. Courageous compassion requires us to slow down. Golly, this is one for me. The beauty of courageous compassion is when we move on from simply giving items away, although don't get me wrong, we do need this. Amy was down at Grow Baby a couple of weeks ago where the two newborn families, brand new babies, they didn't have a single thing for them to put their little ones into, and we were able to respond. So don't get me wrong, we do need to keep giving stuff away. But it's when we can move on past that, past those first needs, and prioritise the much slower and longer-term vision of making new friends and welcoming people into our community. Because we just know that's such a big need in our times, isn't it, for people to be known and spent time with. And of course, we want people to meet Jesus in the mix of all that too, don't we, and be invited towards him. Jesus was great at being interrupted and stopping for the people in front of him. I was down at Blend, the coffee morning we run for refugee and asylum seeker families. I was down there a few weeks ago, and I just loved seeing the volunteers sitting around, chatting, lots of tea, coffee, cake, and just spending time with the community down there. A couple of them were sitting playing chess, taking their chess boards. It was really simple, but I could see it meant such a lot to the refugee and asylum seeker families that were down there, you know, who just wanted to be seen and spent time with, many of whom have come to the city with no friends, no family, sometimes not even much English language, and often carrying huge trauma. And they just were loving sitting and having a chat with someone. There was an article written recently by I can't remember the name actually, but it was written after a visit to the Stay and Play session that our Grow Baby project runs. And she had written this in the article, and I thought it was fantastic, so I thought I'd share it. Stepping foot into the room that Friday morning was stepping foot into the most tangible sense of hospitality one could imagine. Each person that walks through the door of Cardiff's Grow Baby are finding a community who will welcome and host the whole of them, who will weep with them when they're weeping and celebrate with them when they're celebrating. It's a beautiful thing. And lastly, courageous compassion requires risk. Goodness, sometimes to be courageously compassionate, we need to step outside our comfort zone a bit, take a bit of a risk. It can be quite daunting to help other people. We may feel like we're woefully inadequate to help. I know I often do. But thinking about this one, I actually think the vision for our TIADVA house is a great example of this. You know, we provide a space in a house for guys who are, on paper, a fairly risky residents, recently come out of prison, not a brilliant record of paying bills and that sort of thing. But we love the fact that we get to do the day-in, day-out plod against these guys who've had difficult lives and they just need someone or a community to take a risk on them and help them move on with their lives. Do you know what? Right now, we could actually do with some more people who will take a risk personally on these guys. We need landlords, if there are any of you here, to let them properties to move out into. We need business owners to provide job or intern opportunities. We need people to give them teaching, life skills, maybe even come down with you to your allotment and help you pull your carrots out. I know, whilst I have talked a lot today about our Restore projects, because I flipping love them, I'd be in the wrong job if I didn't. But being courageously compassionate, of course, is not about a ministry, but it's about being a compassionate person. You know, and the reality is we are currently in need of a lot more volunteers in our Restore project. If you want to have time to give, we'd love to get you stuck in. Just come and talk to me or Amy, or Anna and Mark, or you can go on our website and find out a bit more. But the challenge is bigger than that, isn't it? It's for you and me to seek out God's heart for the poor and live this out. To make sure that a real concern for those with less is woven into our everyday lives. So the question is this, what does it look like for you and for me? Maybe for you it's to be like John Wimber, and you could keep some food in the back of your car ready to give to someone you think needs them. Maybe you could buy some £5 Greggs vouchers. So when you walk past someone in the city, you can give them a £5 voucher to go and buy some lunch or a steak bake. Maybe it's to support one of the many charities who work to alleviate poverty overseas. You know, I haven't even touched on that today, but there's some amazing groups, Christian groups. I love Tear Fund, you know, who are working so hard to relieve suffering overseas. Maybe it's just to make some decisions, just to live life a little bit more simply for a bit, and then you've got a little bit of extra cash to give away when prompted. You know, I love all the stories I get to hear on a weekly basis in Leading Restore. It's one of the massive perks, but I'm hungry for more. More stories of what he's doing in Restore, more stories of what he's doing in the prison. We go into three prisons now on a Sunday each month, serving the inmates there. More stories of what he's doing in the local area, like with what you're doing at Dusty, you know, as a community, embracing being courageously compassionate. More stories of the church being Jesus' hands and feet. And let's remember, if nothing else, this, that Jesus said that whatever you do to help a brother or sister in need, you do for him. Shall we stand?